mean, growing up, I knew I was going to be tall. I really liked watching kind of how John goes about everything, just as a professional, from a professional standpoint, just because he takes care of his body unbelievably well, and he competes really hard. So I like seeing how he handles tiebreakers or being a situation where he's down break point on his serve. And that's really been helpful for me, seeing a guy like him do that, because at the end of the day, I mean, we are similar, and we definitely get into similar situations on the court.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated / or dash Tennis Channel's tennis podcast, Beyond the Baseline. Our guest today, 19-year-old, 7-foot-tall American Riley Opelka. He's officially listed at 6'11", but after covering the NBA, we know that only people do that is because they don't want people to get psyched up to play against a 7-footer. He's 7 feet. He's also an exceedingly nice kid. 19 years old, and I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. He presents well, had a lot of interesting things to say, may need to work on the nutrition bit of his game, but seems fully aware of that. He's in San Francisco playing a challenger-level event. He was in Dallas last week playing a challenger-level event, and 2 weeks ago he was in the main draw of the Australian Open, where he went 5 sets with David Goffin, who's now a top 10 player. So let's bring him in from San Francisco. It's Riley Opelka. Welcome.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
What's this like? I mean, let's just get right in. I mean, what's life like for a 19-year-old player trying to build his ranking? It's you've been to Australia, you've been to Texas, now you're in San Francisco. People say, what's it like out there? What do you tell them?
There's ups and downs. There's a lot of ups and downs, and I would say it's your body just has to get used to a lot of traveling and a lot of playing. I mean, I went pretty much like back to back. You know, I lost to Dallas less than a week ago, and you know, I'm out playing Monday night in San Francisco. So, and next week I'll be in Memphis playing as well. So I mean, you're always adjusting to different conditions, different time zones, and it's physically and mentally, it's pretty difficult.
What do you do for that? I mean, what are people telling you? And from a physical standpoint, what are you doing to stay fresh when you're on the road so much?
The hardest part for me is dealing with different time zones.
Right.
In the past, that's kind of known. In Australia, I mean, I remember I landed and I was just dead, and and I was just fighting to stay awake. I drank like 2 Red Bulls the first day to keep my eyes open, and that's actually been pretty helpful for me. That's something I've kind of learned to help keep me awake. But also, you know, it's difficult going, like Australia. I was on the plane for 15 hours, and then, you know, 3 hours later I was on the practice court. So the traveling and dealing with the different time zones and conditions is, I guess, some that hopefully I'll get used to a little bit more, and it won't be as difficult for me in the future.
You're 7 feet tall. You show that boarding agent your you show that gate agent your boarding pass. You walk down the ramp. You turning left or right when you walk onto the plane?
Oh, to Australia, I was making a left turn.
All right, good. So at least at least you're not 7 feet tall and coach.
Yeah, no. To on my flight to Australia, I had to go business class, and then I mean, that was huge. And then normally when I'm flying just domestically, the best seat for me on the plane is the exit row. So I always make sure I get that seat in advance.
You got to take trains. So let's talk about Australia, because I saw your match there and was really impressed. You had a rough draw, first of all.
Yeah.
You drew David Goffin in the first round, and you know, now player on the cusp of a top 10. First of all, how did you prepare for that? I mean, you had a couple days. You knew who you were playing. You couple of keystrokes, and you can find all sorts of video on him. How did you prepare for your Grand Slam match down there?
So I qualified. So obviously I was pretty comfortable with the conditions of the courts there, and I had plenty of matches and everything. and I was playing good tennis. So at that point, it was just trying to keep. So I had 2 days after I qualified before I played, and I knew, like you said, I knew I played golf and right away. I practiced just once a day each of those days. I remember I hit for like an hour and a half each day, and I was just kind of keeping in mind that with him, I know that my serve is going to come back a lot more than it did in the qualifying round. So I played a lot of tennis from the baseline. I did a lot of two-on-ones and just kind of practice a lot more, knowing that I'm not going to be in comfortable situations as much with him. And that's kind of exactly what happened. I actually didn't serve my best against him either. And the ball came back a lot, and I was pretty comfortable from the baseline for the most part. I mean, I was pretty pleased with how I played and the fact that I really put myself in a chance to win the match, and I definitely feel like I didn't serve my best.
How'd you hold up physically? I mean, that's play. You're at 4-all in the fifth set and Grand Slam conditions on a pretty hot day. How'd you come out the next day?
I mean, I was a little fatigued, but the next day I was fine. The next day my body was pretty good, actually. I mean, I was definitely fatigued on the court towards the end of the match, but I've practiced in the off season. We played plenty of 5-set matches just to kind of prepare for it, and that's definitely helpful. But I hadn't really played 5 sets of tennis, you know, that against someone as physical as Goffin, so it was kind of, you know, it was my first 5-setter, but. Yeah, physically, I was fine the next day. Had I won that match, I wouldn't have been worried about. I was pretty much fully recovered the next day.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. You would have been okay to play 2 days later.
Yeah.
So what do you? Yeah, I mean, definitely. You're 19 years old, and you're playing a guy. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who's, you know, again, he's right around the top 10. Two rounds later, he plays Dominic Thiem and beats him worse than he beat you. Are you coming out of Australia thinking like? We're doing pretty well here, qualified and went 5 sets with, you know, a top tier player, or is that loss stinging you? I mean, how hard did you take that?
I mean, I moved on pretty quickly, just because I knew I had a pretty busy schedule coming up. Yeah, it was a bummer. Like, there was a break point I had in the fifth, and I thought I won the point, and he hit an unbelievable get and hit a ball right off the back of the line. And, you know, I think back of that, if I came in there, if I would have even hit a volley, if I would have let it go because I thought it was going out. I don't know. That point I thought about a lot on the flight back, that's for sure. But I moved on for the most part. And it was a good feeling, knowing that, I mean, the best feeling was knowing that I didn't serve my best. And, I played with him from the baseline, and I mean that's definitely a good feeling. With my game, I feel like if I'm serving well and I'm hitting my forehand well, I'm going to be in the match. I'll be in a competitive match with a lot of guys just based off of my style of play and my serve. You know,
I feel like it's a weird situation. You can't get through an interview without the inevitable Isner comparison, right?
Yeah.
It's like you get a free pie if you make it through an interview without a John question. But I do think, you know, you're in a unique case where I'm not sure you've got a couple inches on him and a couple inches on Karlovich. How do you sort of, there's no model. I mean, there's no real predecessor. When you and your coaches talk about game plans and talk about recoveries, how do you deal with the fact that there's no other player 7 feet tall that's been out there? And how does that impact you that there's really no basis for comparison?
I mean, it's definitely, I mean, it's, I'm right up there with height-wise with John and Eva. I mean, we're just, I mean, the littlest bit apart, if anything, and if even, but.
I think you got him by a couple inches. I don't know.
And I don't know, just, I mean, growing up, I knew I was going to be tall. I definitely watched a lot of John's matches and kind of, I really liked watching kind of how John goes about everything, just as a professional, from a professional standpoint, just because he takes care of his body unbelievably well, and he competes really hard. So I like seeing, like, he's always been great for me to watch, because I like seeing how he handles tiebreakers, or being a situation where he's down break point on his serve. And that's really been helpful for me, seeing a guy like him, do that. Cause at the end of the day, I mean, we are similar, and we definitely get in similar situations on the court, playing tiebreakers and having critical moments where being down break point for us could almost mean being down set point. So if it's early on in the set, and, you know, watching him deal with, like, those pressure situations, is really, was critical for me to see growing up.
My return game is as important as my service games. Confirm or deny? Do you feel that way?
I don't.
You don't?
return games are huge, and that's something I've really improved on. I've played every return point a lot harder in the last year and a half than I did when I was like 16, 17. But at the end, the thing that's tough when you're returning, for me at least, is when you're playing the best guys in the world, it's so hard to break now. I mean, especially in the conditions in Australia, they're pretty fast.
Right.
You could, if they do everything right, and they do everything, you know, if it, you know, some of the best players in the world, if they do everything they're supposed to do and they take care of everything on their side of the court, they're going to hold. And for the most part, and for me, that's where I think a huge improvement of mine is just being physically and mentally in better condition to play every point, because there's going to be a few moments of the match, a few games of the match where they're going to slip mentally, or they're going to give me a few points, and that's when I have to be ready to try to take my chance and break.
Right. So you. When you won Junior Wimbledon in 2015,
yeah,
I don't know if you remember, we did a tennis. So you were asked. I think you came up to the roof. We did a fun thing for Tennis Channel, but you were asked. Someone in the press room said, "Oh, you know, haha, you've been eating your spinach," and you said, "No, actually, I eat cheeseburgers, Lucky Charms, and I like Chipotle." What's your what's your diet these days?
Could be better. it's pretty similar. I love Lucky Charms. I definitely eat healthier, but you can ask Tommy Paul. He can confirm. I definitely can cut out some Lucky Charms in my life. That's like my go-to breakfast. but it's improved a little bit. It's something that I feel like once I get even a little bit older, that I'm going to have to really, like, change at some point, because, I mean, I'm 19 now, and I don't really feel like my diet affects me on the court yet. And talking to, you know, John Isner's a perfect example. I mean, he's like very strict with his diet, and he's always like, enjoy those days while they last, because they're not going to last too long. That's for sure. He always is messing with me about that, I mean, I'm sure he's right.
John's more into Apple Jacks, I think. Are you, and like every 19-year-old, Red Bull is your beverage of choice?
Yeah, definitely. I drank one actually last night. I played. I didn't get on till 8:45 p.m. 9 p.m. Got off the court around 11-ish, and I actually drank one when I was having dinner before a match, because I was feeling a little bit drowsy, still kind of getting used to the time change here. Flying from Dallas, we're 2 hours behind out here, so definitely that's my beverage of choice.
The kids today. You sound like a college kid. You've got see, I mean, your friends I assume you grew up with, who are, you'll probably, you, I guess you'd be a sophomore, right?
Yeah.
You ever think, like, these guys are having fun and drinking beer out of a funnel and eating Lucky Charms, and I'm stuck in the Stuttgart airport? And, I mean, do you ever think, like, boy, being a college sophomore would be kind of fun right now.
Yeah, I do. I did, like you said, being at the airport by yourself. That's when I think about those times. I'll see like a snap story of someone in college, one of my friends at college. I'm like, oh wow, that looks like the life. But when I'm not alone, when I'm with my friends, which is most of the time when I'm with Tommy, Francis, and Taylor and Michael Moe, I'm not thinking about that. I mean, those guys are my best friends, and for the most part, I'm with at least one or two of them at all times on the road or training in Orlando. So they keep it really fun. I mean, that's what, honestly, I couldn't imagine doing it without them.
I think Taylor Fritz and Michael Moe both have parents that were pro players, and Francis has his interesting origin story. How'd you get into this racket?
Definitely not as cool a story as Francis or you know, Taylor's or Moe's parents having backgrounds in tennis, but I got lucky. I think my dad actually ran into Tom Gullickson at a golf course in Palm Coast. My dad didn't know anything about tennis, and I didn't even think he really knew who Gully was. And we just moved to Palm Coast. My dad was just golfing on his own, and Gully happened to be there. He just got back from a tennis tournament, and they were just looking to, Gully was looking for someone to play with, and ever since they became really good friends, and eventually kind of got me on the tennis court with Gully, and that's been the story ever since. He's been awesome for me.
How tall is your dad?
6'6".
All right, so he tells Gully, I've got a big kid who might be into this tennis sport.
Yeah, for sure. Sure. Gully, I remember it was interesting. Gully was always, I mean, because Gully worked with Todd Martin. I know he used to always talk about, just kind of been around him. And Gully was, I think that's what kind of made it interesting for Gully too, because he never really like developed a player that he knew was going to be 6'6". He thought, I mean, we thought it'd be over 6'6", you know. And I think that was kind of what made it interesting and kind of cool for Tom, or unique, that he never kind of had to develop a player with the mindset of this guy is going to be probably 6'8" at least.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I was talking about before. That, I mean, Todd Martin was a big, you know, big guy out there, but you've got 6 inches on him. I mean, this is...
Yeah.
What kind of sacrifices did your parents make?
Oh, a ton.
They did.
Tom moved to LA to coach at Carson, USTA in Carson. And that was when I was 12, 13 maybe. And, the USTA had invited me to come be a part of their full-time program. And, my parents and I didn't really want to move into the dorms, just because if I move into the dorms, I'm 12 and I stay there for 5 years. I mean, feel like I barely even know my family at that point.
Right.
So, they made a pretty big sacrifice. My sister as well. She gave up her kind of, you know, I mean, she was willing to do it. She kind of wanted to change actually, but she was in high school in Palm Coast and she was willing to move to Boca, which actually I think worked out great for both of us. She loved Boca and I love Boca as well. And we just had a condo, me, my mom, and my sister. My dad still stayed in Palm Coast for his work, and he'd come down whenever, and we'd kind of go back up to Palm Coast on some weekends. But we made it work, and then once I was 15, when my sister graduated high school and went to FSU, I moved into the dorms with my roommates, Tommy Paul and Taylor Fritz. So...
And then,
was kind of in and out.
What about the decision to turn pro? I mean, something we've talked about a bunch on this podcast is this decision. Do you try to go to college for a few years and have that safety net? What went into your decision? How close were you to playing college tennis? How much of this is just I know what I'm doing and pro's the route for me?
Yeah, that's a good question. For me, it was 50-50 for the most part. I mean, I was – My top two, three schools it came down to were UF, USC, and TCU. And I was talking with all three of those coaches pretty seriously, and kind of was leaning, was definitely leaning a little going to college at one point, I definitely had a good fall. I remember in 2014, I won the Eddie Herr, right. Was in the semis of Orange Bowl. And that's when we kind of started talking as well with some agents. And, you know, I realized that, you know, I had a pretty good opportunity on the line. And tennis is something I've always loved doing. And I was pretty confident in myself. And I turned pro in April of 2015. But it definitely wasn't easy. It's not easy, but to a certain point, the decision also kind of makes itself, in my opinion. That's what I would tell, like, some younger guys that are thinking about it, but the decision makes itself. If you have the opportunity with endorsements and contracts to support yourself and you love doing it, then do it. But if the funds aren't on the table, and then it just turns into too much of a grind, and I would say, I mean, go to college, because college tennis is unbelievable right now.
It sounds vulgar to say this, but the endorsements were enough, so you didn't have to worry about money. I mean, you had some USTA support, you had some the finances made it so you didn't feel like every match was you were looking at prize money.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're living off your prize money in the future, and even the challenger level, I mean, good luck.
Yeah, it's sleeping not, in cars.
There's no way. I mean, that could be fun. And I think that's where I always think. I mean, it is a tough decision, but at the same time, if you love what you're doing and that's you have that opportunity, then I'd say the decision makes itself. But I'm curious to see kind of what the young guys do, the younger guys that kind of looked up to our generation, because this has been the most unique one in a while.
Looked up to your generation, dude. You're 19. I think you're right. You win Junior Wimbledon, it's one thing, but
but I'm just saying, like,
I hear you.
You see, like, some 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds at USTA, or even older. I mean, all of us turn pro.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's the right thing for everyone. So I'm curious to see kind of how it affects some of the young guys.
Right. No, and you guys were winning. I think wasn't it all four of you won a different junior Grand Slam? Is that right?
Yeah, three of us: me, Tommy Paul, and Taylor Fritz.
Yeah, that's a different. I think you're the youngest person we've ever had on this podcast. Will you give us like one cool hip phrase that the kids are saying?
Oh, we have like a ton of slang at USTA. I don't even know where to start.
You ever heard "Cash Me Outside"? That's what my kids are saying.
Oh yeah,
everybody knows "Cash Me Outside." How about that?
Yeah, of course.
Jamie, you know that?
That was pretty popular.
We have a young producer.
Tom Brady.
Yeah, Tom Brady said that.
Tom Brady said it.
Oh boy. But seriously, you're 19. You look out there and you're almost half the age. I mean, Federer, Serena, Venus—they're almost twice as old as you are. Is this something with these ages now? Obviously. Changing with careers getting longer, is this something you see yourself doing another 15, 20 years?
Definitely. I mean, as of right now, it's easier for me to say, being, you know, I'm a lot younger. It's different. Like, you know, 15 years traveling on tour and you know, beating up your body and making a ton of sacrifices. I don't know if I'd be saying this in 10, 12 years from now, but as of right now, I mean, I would want to. I'd love to see myself playing tennis for as long as my body could. And that's kind of what I've been doing. Lately, I've been spending a lot of time making sure I'm healthy and staying physically fit, thinking long-term wise, knowing that I want to be doing this for 14, 15 years, 15 more years at least. And I think it's pretty cool to see guys like Roger, obviously always cool to see him win a slam, but guys like Ivo, even 38 years old, and
right,
playing the best tennis of his career.
I was thinking too, for someone with your physique, it sort of cuts both ways. I mean, obviously, you know, it's you got a lot of pounds on you, but you're also probably not grinding it out from the base. I mean, you look at Ivo, and those are short points, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, once I think once I get through my my growth phase. I still feel like I'm growing and kind of growing into my body. Once I can kind of get through that, I think, like you said, I play a different game style than 99% of everyone else on tour, and it's something that my body can kind of hold for, you know. Like, I'm not playing too many 20, 34 rallies.
Right. But that's why I think going four all in the fifth with GoFan really ought to provide you with some encouragement. But you said you're still growing?
Yeah, I think I'm still growing.
Seven feet's not enough? You want to go Yao Ming here?
I wouldn't be surprised if I had another inch in me. But we'll see. It's definitely slowed down. There was a time at the USTA, as soon as I moved, they were checking my height and weight every month. And there was a ridiculous streak I had where I grew a quarter of an inch or more a month every month for like 3 years straight or something, two and a half years straight.
Oh, man.
It was insane. I mean, my growth was like ridiculous through age like 14 to 16.
There are a lot of, Isaiah Thomas? There are a lot of athletes that would kill for that. There are a lot of athletes that would kill for that. Let me ask you this. You look at the top players, and they make a lot of money playing tennis, but they make more money from endorsements and off-court income.
Yeah.
Are you at a point where you're thinking about things like media and image and marketing? Is that something that's already entered? I mean, honestly, you come across great. You're 19 years old. We've had a very nice conversation. Is that something that factors into your thinking? I mean, are you thinking about sort of how I'm going to present myself to the world apart from hitting a tennis ball?
Me, not at all. No, I don't really think that way. Just because. I try to keep as much about the tennis as I can, and that just kind of helps me stay focused. But I don't know, I definitely like I think about it when I'm seeing other athletes. Like, I don't know, like I'll see some guys, and I follow the NFL and the NBA a lot. Like, there's some guys in the league that you can see like some stuff that.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That's a good, yeah. You see, Steph Curry presents himself very differently than DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah. But some of it, like, I always been a bigger fan of the guys that are more natural about it. You know what I mean?
Give me an example of someone who's an athlete you admire.
Like Klay Thompson. I like Klay. He's kind of like, I mean, like you said, Curry's the talk of the team and kind of the talk of the NBA. And no matter, he always is a lot, like all the time. And Klay's just kind of, I don't know, I feel like he's a little bit more.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, I feel like he kind of.
Yeah, background guy.
He's more kind of laid. He's a little bit more laid back, but he's just as important to the team as anyone else. I'm sure everyone on the. In the NBA knows that, but kind of like how he goes about everything.
You are older than Pete Sampras was when he won the U.S. Open. Obviously, the sort of time frames for tennis players have really shifted. But
big
time. You look at it's almost funny to go. I mean, you have 16-year-olds winning majors. Andre Agassi, never happened again, right?
Yeah. Never happened, not even close.
So why is, I mean, we were joking about that. We said, Agassi was this huge disappointment and he had to wait until he was 21 years old until he won Wimbledon.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Now that you've been out there, I mean, we talk about sort of the physique of the tennis and you need the fitness space, but you have thoughts as an athlete, why that is?
Yeah, because physically and mentally are obviously critical in tennis, but to be able to hold up to win a Grand Slam physically, I really don't see any teenager being able to do it. And if Kyrgios wasn't wasn't able to do it. And I mean, he's turning 22.
Right.
If he wasn't able to do it under 21, then guys like Nick, I mean, I think that he's probably about as close or as good as you'll see at that young of an age, in my opinion, if I had to guess. And same with like Zverev. I mean, if those guys aren't winning a slam, they're as good as you can be,
right?
At that age, and if they can't do it, it just shows how tough the sport is. I mean, physically. I mean, you saw Zverev play Nadal. I mean,
oh, it was like by the end, it was like a UFC fight. You wanted the guy to like tap out.
Tennis wise, Zverev was more impressive than Nadal, in my opinion. I mean, and you look what came down the fifth set; he was cramping, and physically he was done.
Right.
And then there's a mental component to it as well. I mean, look at when he played Nadal and anyone else; he was the better player in that match too. And the match point when he missed that volley, I mean, that's just
right.
Like, you know, it's just a little.
Well, I thought you were going to say Kyrgios. Kyrgios seems more a mental issue than a physical issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a good example as well. I mean, he.
But this takes pressure off you.
People talk like with Kyrgios. I mean, he hits the ball just as well as anyone. I mean, he could. That's what I was saying. If he hasn't been able to win a slam, like a guy like him hasn't been able to win a slam under 21, it just shows. I mean, it's almost impossible to do.
So how does this? I mean, I think it's interesting from your perspective, where on the one hand, I imagine that might take some pressure off of you. That, hey, look, this is a long game, and you play till your mid-30s, and no one's a disappointment if they're not winning majors at 21. But you also want to keep making progress. How do you balance sort of a longer shelf life for a career with, look, I don't want to stagnate. I want to keep getting better, even if it's not realistic to say Riley Opelka is going to start winning majors before he turns 20.
Yeah, it definitely. I'm in no hurry. And with my tennis to be at my top level, but and I don't know if that's because of my size and physically and how much more I need to develop and stuff, and or if it's like you said, the fact that I know that the best 21-year-olds in the world haven't really come close to winning a Grand Slam either. There's certainly some guys out there a lot closer than me around my age, but. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty patient with myself, and I know that I, like you said, I got 15 years here, so I'm just kind of starting out, and I'm really in no hurry to, and I don't put pressure on myself to try to be the first one to do it or race to get there, you know.
Last question: you a Nadal guy or a Federer guy?
Nadal's always been like when I was younger. I used to love Nadal. That kind of changed as I got older. It's so hard. I really wasn't rooting for anyone in particular in that final. They've both been like unbelievable for the sport, and it was pretty cool to see that matchup.
Good answer. Hey, this was I enjoyed this. This was fun. I really I appreciate this.
No, thank
you. We want to see more of you. This was was good stuff.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate it.
All right, keep improving in the rankings. We'll start seeing you in main draws soon.
Will do. Thanks again.
All right, take care. Thanks, Riley. All right, that's this week's Tennis Channel Sports Illustrated podcast. Thanks to our guest, Riley Opelka. Really enjoyed that. Talking to a teenager can be a fraught exercise. That was not fraught at all. What a likable guy, and seems to have real perspective on what awaits. So we wish him luck. Again, 19 years old in tennis is not what it used to be. Plenty of time, plenty of road ahead. Thanks to Riley. Thanks to our producer, as always, Jamie Lasanti. I'm John Wertheim. We will have a new guest next week on the Sports Illustrated Tennis Channel podcast. Have a good week, everyone. We'll do it again in 7 days.